Welcome to the Jewelers Podcast, the podcast that talks to jewelers, retailers, and industry supporters about their experiences and insights into the jewelry industry. The Jewelers Podcast is hosted by Laura Moore and Brett Lowe and is part of the Jewelry Industry Network. Whether you're a jeweler, retailer, supplier, gemologist, valuer, teacher, or student, the Jewelry Industry Network is here to help you build your business in the jewelry industry. Join us today as a free member by visiting jewelryindustrynetwork.com, where you can find events, resources, support, and so much more. We can't wait to work with you.
A very special treat for us today on the Jewelers Podcast. We are joined by Nicola Adams from Showcase Jewelers. Welcome, Nicola, to the Jewelers Podcast.
Hi, thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
Nicola is the COO of Showcase Jewelers. And what's your background, Nicola? Where have you come from and how did you get into the industry?
Okay, so I've pretty much only done the industry. I've been in the industry for about 35 years, starting in retail for a decade. And then actually with one of our Showcase members, Matthews Jewelers, worked with them for 10 years, then went to Sydney and got into buying with the majors, spent another decade essentially with them, and moved across when Angus and Cook Goldmark and Prouds combined, and then did another 5-7 years with them, and then luckily enough, I was able to snag the role as merchandise manager with Showcase, and have been with Showcase for the last 7 years. And over the last 12, 18 months, been COO. So, you know, feel very lucky to be a part of the group because it's amazing.
What is Showcase and why is it a benefit to be a member of the group?
Showcase is a buying group, which obviously helps facilitate many things, stock, and allowing members to buy stock, receive stock, but have it go on a centralized billing environment. So that's always really good for members. They have one account come to them, you know, monthly. The suppliers obviously also have the benefit of, you know, guaranteed payment. A Showcase proudly has a AAA rating for our payments, so we pay on time every time. Alongside of that, there is also the support, you know, shared knowledge, training, you know, so many different, every aspect of the industry that you need as a retailer enables you to then be able to, we support you in that area, whether it be websites, training, we have a diamond portal, conferences, catalogs. We help members create their own catalogs and all of their point of sale for stores and any individual promotions that they might have to do. So it really is not only about the family and members connecting, you know, themselves, but it's about us sort of anything that a member might need as a retailer, we have something in place, you know, to be able to support them in that. So, you know, we like to think we're their go-to person for anything they may need. And if we don't know or don't have something in place, we'll certainly have it. Now, we're member-owned. We are the only buying group that's member-owned. And with that, it means that we're all the profits or, you know, go to back to the members at the end of the year as a dividend. So, you know, that's again a really strong element of who we are and what we do and why our members love being a part of Showcase.
I was going to say that's quite a different aspect to the group that is quite unique to Showcase, that it is member owned and the profits all go back. That's really interesting and definitely would be a benefit to members. Yeah. What's the Showcase community like to be part of?
Oh, look, family is the best word to put it. They are, you know, people come. I mean, we've just celebrated our 40-year anniversary of the establishment of Showcase, and we would have an enormous element of our membership who have been part of the group for the last 30 years. Some we still have founding members who are part of the group still. They come, we have fun, we go to retail trips overseas, we have conferences, and you know, it's a real delight when you are at the conference and you get to witness And, you know, it's why everybody's so excited about catching up again after 2 years, because they get to reconnect with friends and family. That's who they see it as. So, you know, and it was interesting. I was talking to one of our members who hasn't, we haven't had our conferences. And, you know, he's a reasonably young fellow. He's, you know, running his business. And he was saying, I'm really looking forward to the conference. He said, because when I see members at conferences and I see them twice a year, plus maybe another event like an overseas trip or something like that, he said, and I have a question in my head that I'd really like their opinion on, I happily will ring them. And he said, you know, because I see them, we chat, he knows that we're all on the same page. But he said, when you don't have that community and that connection, it makes it a little bit harder to reach out to other people. So I guess that was really good to hear, that what we provide as a group helps you as an individual retailer every day, just getting through the day and the stuff that goes on, you know, being a business owner.
Yeah, it can certainly feel quite isolating, I think, otherwise, unless you've got that community behind you. So that's interesting. What are you most looking forward to for the group in the next year?
Seeing them. Continue seeing them. Look, post-COVID is, our members have had a really good couple of years, just like the rest of the world. When COVID reared its head, we were incredibly nervous about what the future held for Showcase and for all of our members, et cetera. And, you know, we thank our lucky stars that, you know, all of the members have come through COVID with many, many great results and have been able to take time to stop and look at how they do business. And I guess for the next couple of years, it will be connecting the members with the suppliers, getting them to make the changes that they kind of, I guess, acknowledged that they needed to make changes, and moving forward with that. And, you know, we want to get more recruitment. We want to get more members. We have obviously older members, which we know, you know, are going to retire at some point. And it's really good that we are already seeing new members come on board. And, you know, we really look forward to more and more members, particularly younger members, coming on board and becoming part of the group, because, you know, there's lots of young members in the group and, you know, they have a great deal of fun and they are able to share that knowledge. And I think that, you know, the membership growth is we're looking forward to, and we think there's lots of opportunity for that over the next couple of years.
Exciting. Very good. Well, thank you so much, Nicola, for joining us today on the Jewelers Podcast. We'll speak to you again very soon.
Thanks very much. Happy to help and happy to be here.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Jewelers Podcast. I'm Brett Lowe, joined here with my lovely co-host Laura Moore. How are you today, Laura?
Hi, Brett. Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Nice to see your face on Zoom again. And today, yeah, well, you know, yeah, I'm full of flattery, but today we're joined with another good-looking rooster. It's Carl from Xenox Diamonds in Brisbane, Managing Director. So welcome to the Jewelers Podcast, Carl.
G'day, Brett. Laura, lovely to be here.
Hi, Carl. Lovely to see you. It's been such a long time and I'm thrilled to have you on the podcast. It's such a lovely treat. So welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm excited to be on the show.
Yeah. So I suppose we should start with an introduction for those who may not be from Brisbane, because I think everyone jewellery industry in Brisbane would know who you are, Carl, and know the Xenox brand. But let's introduce you to the wider audience. So Xenox, you know, synonymous with jewellery in Brisbane, in the Queen Street Mall. You've been around like second generation jeweller. So tell us a bit more about the background of the brand.
So the business is 46 years old now, actually coming close to 47. My parents obviously started all that time ago. My dad did his apprenticeship at about the age of 15 when his father, so my grandfather, pulled him out of school and said, you need to learn a trade because it'll take you anywhere you want in the world. And then he proceeded to do that. He traveled the world, you know, working through the Middle East, through to Japan, South Africa, and then finally ended up, as the funny story would say, actually met my mum on the boat immigrating from Europe to Australia, and that's how they met.
Cute.
Yeah, and they set up a jewelry sort of business in Sydney back in those days. And when I feel like having a good go at my dad, I remind him about the fact that he had a little cottage in Vaucluse that he sold, and what it would be probably worth today.
just to rub it in.
Yeah, but they moved up to Brisbane in 1976, and that's when they started Xenox. Now, got a very European background, so half German, quarter Italian, and quarter Greek. So pretty much a bit of a European bitzer. And so, when they were coming up with the name, they wanted something, back in those days, for those of you who are old enough to remember the old directories, remember, AA diamonds and ABC diamonds, because you wanted to be to the top of the directory. Of course, that doesn't really matter today with the internet, but back in those days it did. But my parents wanted to come up with something that didn't just sound like everything else out there. And I guess that philosophy went through the styling and the kind of jewelry that my father used to make. So that in Greek writing, they use a lot of X's. There's sort of some simplicity in a palindrome, where it's the same forwards as it is backwards. And then that's where the name, came from, Xenox. And it's kind of unusual because it's a Z sound, but it's actually written with an X. So it was all about being distinctly unique and different and not just following the status quo. And I think that was a strong philosophy. My dad would always say to me, I design things and I make them not because necessarily anyone may ever buy them, but to do something that's interesting and different. And I think that's something that always stuck with me. When I'm designing jewelry and doing things, I'm designing things that are interesting and different and not just the same as everybody else.
Fantastic. What a great story about the name of your company. I think that's really fascinating. I was thinking maybe it's because you wanted to be at the back of the classifieds, the back of the yellow pages, instead of at the very front. Exactly. Reading from the back to the front. So, that's really interesting. Do you tell your customers that story today, or do you just...
In an abridged version, obviously. But for me, being around jewelry, what I do sometimes say is that, really for me, jewelry's in the blood. I remember, and for anybody that's grown up in a family business probably knows this, you were probably called in on weekends to do things. And, in those days we used to do these mail outs to our clients, 3,000 of them. We used to have to lick seal the envelopes and put on labels on the front. And my dad would typically leave it to the last minute. So we were there up to all hours of the night doing all these mail merge things. But one of my distinct memories, and I can't even picture how old I would have been at the time, probably 7 or 8, was, my dad had this workshop underneath the house and, there were lots of oils. And I can distinctly remember the smell of oil that he would use, obviously through drilling and the rubbers that he used to have. It's one of those really strong anchoring points to me, child, seeing this fascination of, heating up this piece of metal to a hot cherry red and then quenching it in the water like the Knights of the Round Table in King Arthur. I thought there was something really magical about the side of jewelry and making something with your bare hands. And I think that's where the love for me began.
Fantastic. I used to love seeing that actually with my previous work. The refinery area was always my most exciting space because, even the diamond setting area was great and the faceting and some of the, big lathes, the refinery where this huge crucible would pour molten gold into something was just such an ancient thing, which was really raw and beautiful and, the beginning of that process of creating a piece of jewelry. So it was, fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still so raw, the process too. And I bet you smell it's probably wintergreen or something like that he was using. I bet you smell that and it takes you straight back to your childhood as well.
Yeah, I love it. I love hanging out in the jewelry store, in the workshop and smelling all those things. And it sounds really weird when you say to people, I just love the smell of the rubber, but that's where it came from.
So did you literally grew up in the jewelry industry then, in the workshop around your father? There was no... Yep. Question, you're going to go any other direction?
That's an interesting. I mean, my mum would always say that, even as an infant, she had me in a bassinet underneath the counter. I would come in on the weekends and, make coffees for, again, very European. We used to like making coffee a lot, make coffees for the sales team. And then I think I was about 14 when my dad started getting me to make some of those apprentice exercises and just sort of tinkering around and playing with it, which was heaps of fun as well. Although I think if I look back, I think I have one or two of them still around. They're absolutely horrible. when I'm working with apprentices today to kind of get them to do the same exercises and I look back at what I did, I mean, admittedly only 14, but it just what I love about it is the lines, you know, and looking for the straight edges and how you can take a piece of jewelry and there are complete layers of perfection. You know, yes, the line was straight. Okay, great. But was the edge flat as well? Or was the front edge, and when you really dissect it down to its levels, you can really see when you see a master at work and you look at a piece and you go, wow, that's amazing. Not only how did they make that with their hands, but the fine points of every single line being perfect is something that I just have absolute admiration for the craftsmen that spend, you know, all day, every day, just like you, Brett, on the bench working on those sort of things.
The maths always floors me. Like, how, just going through the maths of getting all of those components correct to make sure they fit perfectly, is fascinating. So, what was your process then, Carl? To actually, you were on the bench tinkering a little bit at the age of 14. Yeah. Did you continue that journey on the bench, or did you go into a different area of
the
business?
Well, yeah. The funny thing is, and I still look. I'm now another little side note story. My wife and I, we've got four kids, triplet 16-year-olds, and an 8-year-old.
Wow. That's busy.
Yeah, it really is busy. But I look at my kids now and they're year 11 and year 12 at school. And I go, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I think it's so hard to expect these kids in year 11 and 12 to know exactly what they want to do for the next 40 plus years, hopefully, if that's what they want to do. And at that time when I was leaving school, this, and again, I'm prefacing it for those of you who are old enough to remember the beginning of the internet. Computers was the big thing, and I was like, I'm gonna go and do computers, and I didn't end up doing that, but I actually went to uni, did a science degree, majoring in psychology, but I was always working in the shop, you know, it never really left. I was always working there on the weekend, and I actually enlisted in the army as well. I spent 10 years as an artillery captain, so I was always doing two or three different things at any one time. But for me, as much as I love the science and the craft of making it, the thing that really captured my imagination and love was just looking at diamonds and the picking of the gemstones. Like, why does this diamond sparkle the way that it does? And what did the cutter do right? And what did the cutter could have done better? And so I have an absolute love and appreciation for, you know, also the cutting and polishing of gemstones. And that ultimately led me to write my book that I wrote, which was Rock Her World, which is the ultimate guide to, you know, choosing the perfect engagement ring. But just digging down to helping clients find not only just the perfect ring and the jeweler to help them do that, but also choosing this amazing centerpiece in the middle, which was the diamond.
Tell us a bit more about your book then, Carl. When did you decide to start authoring something yourself?
I think I published that one in 2015. It actually went on to win an international book award for the best how-to book.
Oh, congratulations.
Well done.
Yeah, it's something. One of my most proudest achievements was when I won that. And it's just a book that most people find really easy to understand and relatable. So I tried to take as much of the jargon out of it and just kind of put it in as very much in layman's terms as to why you should choose this diamond as opposed to this. Or if you're looking for a stone like this, these are the things that you should look out for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic.
How long does it take? Just like, I guess how long's a piece of string, but how long does it take you to write a book like that?
Well, there's two answers I usually give to that, Brett. The first answer is it takes, you know, a lifetime of learning to kind of gather the knowledge to do it. The second answer is it took me a month to write the book.
Oh, wow.
Lifetime in a month.
Yeah, yeah. but you know what? That took a lot of discipline because I think the kids at the time would have been about 9 and 11. So, you know, at the end of a day of working, I come home and we'd do the usual sort of nighttime routine for any of you who have kids, you know, the bath and cleaning. And when you've got multiples, it's a very much a production line, you know, it's like, you know, feed, brush teeth, you know, clean up next. So goes the conveyor belt. But I set myself a discipline that every night from about, by the time we'd cleaned up and everything, it was probably about 8:30. So from every night for a month, from 8:30 to 10:30, I would just sit down at my computer and write. And I'd write about what it was that I'd encountered that day, maybe what frustrated me, what I thought would be, you know, hugely beneficial. So that whole creative process took about a month. It's about 46,000 words. I can usually write about 1,000 words an hour. And then from there, it goes to the editor, to the typesetter to do the cover. So all in all, it probably takes a couple of months from when you start to the book being finished, but the actual manuscript, the writing part, took me a month.
I find that really interesting that your brain still, you can be so analytical after a big day of work, dealing with all the children, you get home, then 8:30 at night, sitting down and thinking about creative writing. And I tell you, my brain's not so creative that time of day.
Well, it was just the only time in the day that I could do it, that I was going to have the least amount of disruption. Still had to go to work, still had to do the kids' stuff, and then all the time it was left.
What was your reasoning for wanting to write a book, Carl? Was it because you really enjoyed the psychology behind why people buy diamonds and how they get engaged, or was there a little bit more to it than that?
No, I just found that I was saying the same things over and over to the same kind of clients. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was kind of like, well...
Read this instead.
They sometimes talk about a book as like a business card on steroids. You know, it's a great authority asset. So obviously, you know, apart from the fact that it won an international award, it meant that I could hand the book to my team and the team could say, hey, don't take my word for it. Look, the boss has written a book. Here is everything you need to know, all about diamonds, all about this and all about that. And it just made it easy for not only for people to kind of believe that this content was hugely valuable, but that it allowed them just to kind of pinpoint for whatever their frustration was. They didn't have to read the whole book. They could just go to chapter 5 or 6 if that's what they were just trying to get some, you know, further detail on.
Mm, yeah, fantastic. It's a really good way actually of like getting something out there that, you know, can reinforce your brand. And I mean, another thing that you're fantastic at is, I think, again, going back to your love of psychology, is using things like Google reviews and, you know, your customer testimonials to really enhance your expertise in your brand. Tell us a little bit about how you do that.
A business coach once said to me that, like, when you think about what brings you joy in business, it's usually at the intersection of your two greatest values. And for me, what that was anything to do with experiences. And the second one was high quality products, services, or business owners. So, you know, people that were dedicated to being the best of what they could do. And when I'm at the intersection of those two values, that's when I'm at my happiest. So I was trying to teach the team to go out there and give a great experience to the client, which is what I love doing. It kind of brings me just as much joy to do that for my clients as it probably is for them to receive it. But I found very quickly that everybody has a different definition of what a great experience looks like. And particularly if you've never experienced it for yourself, it makes it very difficult to give it to somebody else. And so what I thought about, well, how can I really get people crystal clear on what they have to do? And so what I thought about was the American tipping system. When you think about it in America, you know, when you've done a great job is because you get a bigger what?
Bigger tip in the pocket.
Right. So I try to use that metric of Google reviews as being a way of measuring whether the clients did a great job, whether our sales team did a great job for our clients. It's like, was it a 5-star Google experience? And so it became a very easy dashboard metric on how to do it. Now, there's loads of things that I do in the background to kind of help them and mentor them in how to do that. We empower our team. Our team knows that they can spend $100, no questions asked, anything you want to do to surprise and delight a client, you've got that ability to do that. So what I didn't realize at the time when I was doing it was just how big an authority asset, you know, having all of these Google reviews would be, or the digital benefit that comes from it. So about 36% of your SEO, your local SEO, and as jewelers, I think a lot of times, you know, as much as we can do things online, so much of what we do is for the local market. They want to come and touch and feel and experience it for themselves. And 36% of your SEO comes from your Google business profile. And almost most people have just about claimed it and not done anything else with it.
Yeah.
And so I show them how to have a top 1% on Google profile. And then the second part of that is 16% of your SEO comes from your Google reviews. You know, all of the different things that people are writing in your Google reviews. Because why is that so? Well, Google looks at us like ants. We're out there bumping into stuff and you know, oh, was this good? No. Was that good over there? Yes, go there. And the reason that Google makes all its money is because it's become very good at predicting and matching what you're searching for with what is the best of market match. And the better that we can help Google do that, the better people want to use the Google platform and the more money it makes from ads and sponsorship. So Google wants to reward you if you've got a great optimized profile, if you've got lots of Google reviews and that are coming through regularly. I think at Zenox, we generate somewhere between 3 and 10 Google reviews every single week. And so I realized actually what impact this was having on our business, but it didn't really fully crystallize till COVID hit. And I can still remember I was in Germany visiting family. It was January 2020. And I was listening to this COVID thing thinking, this thing will blow over. It'll be just like SARS or swine flu. How wrong was I? Got back and then the government came out and banned weddings, which is absolutely disastrous when that's pretty much what you do.
Engagement. Your industry.
Yeah. Mm. And of course, what happened was people couldn't get married. So if you can't get married, why get engaged? So everything pretty much in our front deal flow just kind of stopped. And, you know, I think everybody was in that real fear and scarcity mode. So everybody just kind of ghosted. Nobody wanted to talk to anybody, just hunker down. And even the clients that we had all this completed work for, same story. And then on the other side, I had all of these suppliers ringing me saying, look, you know, we want our money and we need it within 14 days, which was terrible because I think if I treated my clients the way that they did, I probably wouldn't be in business. But at that time, I had to look and sort of say, well, I need more clients. Where are our clients coming from? Because that's going to be the first place I'm going to go to find more clients. And what I found kind of shocked me in the previous year, 2019, we'd had 173 sales that had come in purely from our Google reviews, you know, which translated to more than $1 million in top line revenue.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And it was just up until that point, even though we track everything through our CRM and the point of sale, I'd never really taken the time to kind of sit down and kind of work out, well, where is our business coming from and how can we get more of it?
Yeah, it's such a powerful thing, obviously, when you can sit down and go through those analytics to figure out what things, you know, where things are coming from. And I think with COVID hitting, it was a bit of an eye-opener for jewelers who were going local, obviously having to go local, to then go, well, you know, where are my customers coming from? But the interesting thing about what you've just said is that you were already actively working on your Google reviews and on your Google local profile and on your Google assets, whereas so many jewelers didn't start that process until COVID did hit and they went, well, there's no other avenue to get out there.
Yeah.
How important do you think was it for your team to have obviously have had that track record so that you could just bolster it rather than starting it from scratch when COVID hit?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, when's the best time to plant an oak tree? Well, 20 years ago, when's the next best time? You know, there's never a better time to start working on your online reputation than right now. So I don't think it really matters that that we'd already started on it beforehand. And for anybody out there, like, start now. I mean, we're on 942 five-star Google reviews at the moment, and we're sort of on track to hit 1,000 by the end of the quarter. Every business can do it. But the hard thing is that in the beginning, most of the clients that I work with in the beginning, they're probably converting 1 out of 10, maybe 1 out of 15 people that they ask for a Google review that ends up in a review. And I think what I've spent the last 2 years really doing is going down the rabbit hole and kind of working out, why is it that I do what I do, how I do what I do, and how does that actually result in the ultimate kind of reviews that we get? And all the benefits that you can get from optimizing your profile. So I'm constantly researching for the latest changes in Google and how they're changing things and what we have to, as business owners, have to be mindful of in how we do that. But when it comes to Google reviews, there's actually about 5 different levels of a Google review. And most businesses are hitting the bottom 2. Mm-hmm. So a Google review, all Google reviews are not created equally. There are actually some that are a lot better. If you can get a Google review that has photos, you know, keywords, detailed description, mentoring, team members, you know, all of that sort of stuff is so much more rich in terms of Google's eyes, and they will send more traffic your way if you can get those kind of reviews. Mm. And so it's a matter of teaching people that, yes, it's great to get a Google review, and you should get a critical mass of about 100 is a really good benchmark to really start with, because they did a study of 2.4 million small businesses across 30 business categories. And they found that the average business on Google has about 73. So if you've got 20 or 30, that's a really good start, but really the 100 is the first benchmark to aim for. I find that with some of the clients that I work with, You know, when they get to about 100, it's one, you're probably getting a new lead every 3 to 4 weeks. When you hit 200 reviews, you're probably going to get a new lead every 1 to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it just, you just have to keep building on that reputation side of things.
I think too, when you're looking at your social strategy or your digital strategy, understanding what the objectives are of the platforms that you're exploring is also really key. If you know that obviously Google wants to be the main platform for everything. So if you use their assets and use their tools and do what they want you to do, then you'll absolutely be promoted more than other people who may not be doing that. And Facebook's the same and Instagram's the same. And if you understand what they're all wanting, then activate based on what they're wanting, then that also, as long as it's right for your business, then you'll be amplified even more.
Yeah, it's not that I say don't do Facebook or social. I think they're really important and they do play a part. I just say do Google first. Like 9 out of 10 searches are happening on Google's platform. And if you think about the buying behavior of people when they're in that mode, they're in a really direct search frame of mind. Like, I need something. I've got a problem with something. Who can help me get the answer to that? Whereas social is a little bit more, you're more in the backseat. You're kind of saying, oh, isn't that interesting? Oh, that looks nice. But it may not necessarily be the platform that you go to search for. Like, if you're a guy looking to find engagement rings, it may not necessarily be the first place that you go for. So that's why I always say go to Google. Everything you type or do in Google has an SEO benefit. Whereas if it's on Facebook or if it's on even, you know, some of the other platforms, there's no SEO benefit that you're going to get from doing that.
Mm. I'm going to need to give you a call more often. I need to call you more often and find out so that I don't have to research it myself.
Yeah, that's right. That's the easiest way is to go to somebody that's already achieved the results that you want and, you know, let them do the brain damage of trying to work it out.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask you, Carl. Like you've done so much research and obviously your CRM's helped quite significantly having that data that you can delve into and break it down. And I guess as you've sort of touched on a few points there, you're obviously enjoying this mentoring and passing this information on. You're not keeping it to yourself. So you want to tell us more about that, like how you're going about passing this on, because you've been very free with your information with us today.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a discussion that we had at the recent GIN event. And I think that, unfortunately, there are a lot of people in our industry that have this kind of mentality of, well, I don't want to share because, you know, what if they become my competitor and I lose my competitive edge? And I think for me, I'm at an age now, the ripe old age of 44. I know, very old, right? You know, I've been in the industry now for 26 years. I'm looking for the next chapter, which is for me. I still have a deep love of jewelry, and I still work in the shop every week because I love it. But also, there are a lot of people out there that are just getting into the industry, and some of them have a jewelry background, and some don't. And if I can help them, you know, get a leg up and learn some of the things that I've probably spent the last 26 years learning. I think that would have a massive impact on their family and their life and just their general enjoyment for this beautiful trade that we all work in. So for me, it's kind of a case of now of handing the baton over and kind of seeing, you know, somebody else do something amazing and grow their business, whether it's a family business, whether they're in it as a partnership. I just want to really kind of help them. And there's a lot of different things that I guess I've perfected over the last many years. Google reviews is just one of them. I actually also created my own version of Afterpay that we run internally. I've created promotions that every time we run them generate anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000 in top line revenue. And we've got that systemized and automated. So there are lots of little things like that that I want to kind of teach people how to do in their own business, wherever they are, because I know that even just one of these strategies would have a massive impact.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. That sounds really good. So how can we, here's my plug, here's the call to action. How do we get in touch with you then about how to learn all this stuff? What are you doing about passing this information on, Carl?
Yeah, so I've actually created my first sort of training program, which is specifically for jewelers. And it's a 10-part module that I've put together, and I'm looking to create a little pilot program. So looking for 5, maybe 10 jewelers. Originally, we were talking about the Women in Jewelry Network. I think there's a lot of value there for them in their startup. But you could reach out to me at Carl at my 5-star reviews. That's my, M-Y, the number 5 and star reviews. And I'm sure there'll be links and appointment links in the show notes that we can put in there. But I think it's one of those things that 12 months from now will make a massive impact in someone's business. And it's my genuine wish that they get as much love and reward that this business has to offer, because we go into it because we love it, but we're also there to get some sort of reward to look after our family as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's great that we can have, you know, assets like yourself who know the industry. You know, you're not coming at it from a completely different angle. You're not just trying to plug a specific product or service. It's that you understand what the industry needs and where you've come from as well. So yeah, that's really great. We'll definitely put it in our show notes, that's for sure.
Yeah. even all the little things like you know, how do we sell lab created diamonds versus natural diamonds? How do you navigate the ethics around that, to being true to your client? You know, some of the other processes around upsell, cross sells, and that side of things. One of the and I think I shared this with you, Brett, in 2021, so last, I really kind of transitioned. I appointed actually a general manager to run the day-to-day operations of our business. And what amazed me, and if you'd said this to me, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, I would have said you're crazy. But doing this shift and moving into this coaching and mentoring role, I was actually able to sell 80% more working 20% of the time.
Wow.
And so some of the things that I've done to do that, I'd love to be able to share, because I think a lot of us in this industry work very hard. And if we can work smarter and not necessarily harder, again, that's only going to help everyone have more quality time with their family. I mean, I know with you, Brett, you know, with young family and everything, I remember in my early days when I was working in the shop, you know, doing 70-80 hour weeks, and you do miss out a lot on the kids growing up, but it's a necessity that we do at the time because we're providing for our families. And that's just the same for the ladies out there that are starting their own businesses. And I think if I could go back in time and I had someone that could help me, you know, be smarter and more efficient in the way I was doing what I was doing, so I could spend more time with the kids, I definitely would do that. Mm. So I think that's really for me. I mean, like I said, my kids are older now. But I sometimes look back with a little bit of regret, thinking, you know, I probably worked a little bit too hard when they were little. And I'd love to go back and do it. But the only saving grace is that I've got 4 kids. So that means potentially a lot of grandkids. So an opportunity to kind of, you know, do it again, but do it slightly differently.
Yeah, I'm sure they appreciate the work you've put in to get them, get the life that they have. And tell me, do they show an interest in coming into the Xenox family business?
My kids are a lot of musos, like my wife's a muso. So that's where they get all their musical talent from, their mother, not me. My only musical instruments are my ears. but the oldest one's definitely a muso. The next, one is probably going to be, wants to become a doctor or a surgeon. The youngest boy, we've had him in doing, some like saw piercing. We actually did like a Fortnite character doing like a dab.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and do something funny out of silver. I'd say if any one of them are going to do it, it'd probably be the youngest boy. Mm-hmm. The youngest girl wants to do something in like a laboratory where she doesn't have to talk to too many people. So I have to say one of them is, and I only need one, and I think that's why I had 4. I just need one of them to take over the family business. It's probably going to be the youngest boy.
And do you bring this systematic approach and efficiency into the household as well? I suppose you have to with 4 kids.
Yeah, we've got rosters everywhere, like you can imagine, for all the different things that need to happen. And everything is quite, it has to be when you've got that many kids.
Yeah, yeah. And that army background doesn't hurt either.
I was going to say, that's a good point.
Sometimes a drill sergeant can be a bit of a drill sergeant at home.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Awesome. Carl, thank you so much for your time today. It was absolutely fascinating finding out about, I mean, obviously your business, but what you're planning on now with your next stage of your career within the jewelry industry. It's fascinating. So keep us posted when you've got new things coming up, and we can't wait to share them.
Yeah, and I look forward to seeing you at the fair next year.
Yes, absolutely. That'd be
fantastic. Yeah, and hopefully your email doesn't blow up after sharing it on the podcast so freely. So good luck, Carl.
My pleasure. Happy to share.
Thanks, Carl. Have a great day. We'll see you again.
See you soon. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Please hit subscribe to the Jewelers Podcast so that you don't miss our next episode. You can get in touch with us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Jewelers Podcast. See you next time.